Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Hello, joining us on The Parent Show this evening. Coming up, we have one of the top academic researchers and psychologists in the world, Carol Dweck. We're very excited. I'm Cathy Weston.
And I'm Shirley Hayman.
Carol Dweck is one of the world's leading researchers in the fields of personality, social psychology and developmental psychology. She's been the professor of psychology at Columbia University, Stanford University and Harvard in the States. And we are talking tonight about her book, Mindset, How We Can Learn to Fulfill Our Potential. Mindset is a book that Professor Dweck wrote, I believe, in 2008, and it has had such a dramatic influence across the world of education, parenting, business, and even within the realm of personal development and relationships. It's had an enormous impact. So we're very, very privileged to be speaking to her tonight about that book. And what's in the book, Shirley? What can people look forward to hearing this evening as parents?
Well, Cathy, I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head. A lot of academics and teachers know about this book, but we really want parents to kind of dig into it tonight, try and apply her science of persistence and praise. You know, so it's really two important elements there, persistence and praise, that we hope, you know, Carol's going to talk to us about. And I guess, you know, for listeners that haven't heard of the book, they can Google it now. And if they listen in, that they're going to probably want to buy it, I think, after tonight's
absolutely.
Discussion.
And many people we've spoken to, you know, have read it three times already. They dip into it. They're all very, very excited. So we're delighted to have her on the show this evening.
So, Carol, good evening. Are you there?
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much for it's lunchtime, isn't it, where you are?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on The Parents Show in the UK. So, Carol, for listeners here that maybe haven't heard of your book, we've just introduced it before you came on air. Would you be kind enough to just tell us, how did this book come about? How did it emerge? What made you want to write it initially?
Well, do you want the truth?
Yes, please.
So many of my students said, this work could really help people, and so far we're just publishing it in scholarly journals. You have to write a book that would reach the public. And I took that very, very, very seriously and did it.
And Carol, wasn't the book based on academic research with young children? Is that correct, initially?
Yes, the book is based on very solid, rigorous academic research with children and adults that cut across many different areas, but mostly focused on achievement, who fulfills their potential, who likes challenges and sticks to them, who succeeds better than who else. Even someone who has the same initial ability.
And I think early on in your work, when you were working with children, you realized that some of the kids were persevering with a challenging task and others were simply giving up. And that's what your book is about, isn't it? Two types of mindset.
That's exactly what it was about. When I first started doing research, I was interested in how children reacted to failures. And much to my surprise, well, I knew some kids coped better than others, but much to my surprise, I saw that some children actually relished challenges and even setbacks. They said things like, I love a challenge. I was hoping this would be informative. And my eyes just bugged out of my head because here I was giving them problems that were too hard for them, giving them what I considered failure. And they were excited. I determined then and there, I'm going to figure out what they have, and I am going to bottle it.
So we're starting to become familiar over here, Carol, with the terms fixed and growth mindset. For the listeners, would you mind just kind of, in a nutshell, as best you can, explaining those two positions?
Of course.
Thank you.
When students are in a fixed mindset, they believe that their basic abilities, their intelligence, their talents are just fixed traits. They have a certain amount and that's it. This has a lot of repercussions. They don't want to take on hard tasks because maybe it will show them to be not clever. They don't stick to challenges because struggling makes them feel like they're not clever. They paper over mistakes because they mean they're not clever. So they're arranging their whole lives to look intelligent and never look non-intelligent. But students in a growth mindset believe that these abilities can be developed through hard work, good strategies, and help from others. They don't think everyone's the same, but they think everyone can get smarter and more talented through effort, finding good strategies, and getting good help and instruction from other people.
Thank you, Carol. We've actually got a diagram that demonstrates the difference between growth and fixed mindset that we've put on our Facebook page earlier, so people can actually see the characteristics of what you describe. Because I think we've all, you know, we all recognize these different mindsets in ourselves, but also in our children. You know, the child who says, "Oh, I'm no good at that," it just gives up, or the child who actually perseveres through the challenge. So the characteristics of both are very interesting. You've listed them as with a fixed mindset. Said, I'm either good at it or I'm not. When I'm frustrated, I give up. I don't like to be challenged. When I fail, I'm no good. Tell me I'm smart, so they care about how it looks, as you say. If you succeed, I'll feel threatened and my abilities determine everything. And Shirley, you've got the description there of the growth mindset, which, Carol, for all of our listeners, we're trying to strive for, aren't we? This is the one.
Yeah.
This is the one that we all want to nurture in our children.
So for growth mindset, Carol says the child's going to say, I can learn anything I want to. When I'm frustrated, I persevere. I want to challenge myself. When I fail, I learn. Tell me if I try hard. And if you succeed, I'm inspired. My effort and my attitude determine everything. So this is what you were finding, Carol, weren't you, with these children that were saying, give me a challenge?
Yes. They wanted the challenge. They stuck to it. We actually saw many of them solve problems that were impossible, or I thought were impossible for kids that age, because they became so focused and so determined that they kept getting better and better at these really, really hard problems. They, you know, they made themselves smarter before our eyes.
So what's
do you say clever or do you also say smart?
Do you know what? I think we're starting to say smart over here now because people think clever, you know, necessarily isn't the right word to use. But we used to say clever a lot in the UK.
Okay.
So, you know, what's the impact of either mindset on learning for children?
We have done many studies where we measure students' mindsets. Do they believe their intelligence is just fixed or it can be developed? And then we follow them over difficult school transitions, difficult courses, and we see consistently that students who endorse a growth mindset do better. They do appreciably, significantly better than students who hold a fixed mindset. We just studied all the 10th graders in the country of Chile, and we saw first that the mindset was as important as any economic variable, like family income or school poverty. Not to say those aren't important, just to say that mindset is also important. And we saw that at every single level of family income, those with a growth mindset did substantially better than those with a fixed mindset. Now, that's just, as we say, a correlation. But in many studies now, we have taught students a growth mindset and see an increase in their grades especially in subjects that are challenging for them, as maths are here, and especially for students who are struggling. But also, for students who are doing well, it makes them more courageous to try challenges and learn more.
Now, Carol, there's two important things I think parents need to know about when they're listening to you. They're thinking, but my son, he's always been like that. It's his personality, you know. You've just said that we can actually influence the growth mindset. As parents, can you tell us about the role of praise in that process? Because your book implies that there are ways of praising, for example, over-praising, that are counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the type of praise? I think you say, for example, it should be specific and sincere. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yes, we have found in many studies now that the way you praise your children matters. We have found that praising talents, abilities, and intelligence is a bad thing. It backfires. It puts children into a fixed mindset, because you're telling them it's fixed and you have it. I can just look at your performance or your grades and I know you have it. After we praise students for intelligence, they don't want a hard task,
mm-hmm.
and they crumble in the face of difficulty. So what's the alternative? We have found that praising the process students engage in, their hard work, their perseverance, their focus, even the very choosing of a challenge, those are the things that put them into more of a growth mindset and have them eager for challenges, resilient in the face of setbacks. So it's praising the strategies they've used and encouraging them to try new ones. It's praising the hard work, but make sure they have worked hard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's praising that perseverance, the focus, and the improvement. Look, you really stuck to it, and you can do it now. You couldn't do it yesterday. So keep focusing on that growth over time. And we find,
And Carol, that advice is very easy to absorb if you have a child perhaps who's not doing as well in tasks. For children who are very able, again, what would be the advice around praise? You know, they're bringing home the A pluses, for example. What can a parent say? You know, is it again, you must have worked hard for that grade A? What strategies did you, or that, I think you suggest in the book, you say that wasn't quite challenging enough for you, let's find something else.
Mm-hmm. So if a student is coasting to an A, as some students are in our system, you don't praise effort. You don't praise effort that's not there. You don't praise taking on a challenge if they haven't taken on a challenge. And instead, I recommend that you say, oh, you got an A and you didn't really work hard. You know, you must not have learned much. You kind of cheated.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it's a whole new message. It's the message that easy things are boring and a waste of time. I don't admire a quick success on an easy thing. And that challenges, the things that are hard, things that are challenging, those are interesting and worthwhile. So then I would say to a child, let's do something you can learn from.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly important to challenge kids who coast in school, because you know what? It's often sealing their fate in a negative way. They are learning that being smart means you never have to work hard like other kids. But guess what? one day they do have to work hard, and it makes them feel bad. It makes them feel stupid when they work hard. Many of them opt out and never fulfill their potential. So everybody must be challenged. And then we praise the hard work, trying different strategies.
Yeah, the different qualities, that contributed to the success rather than the success
exactly.
in itself. Yeah.
Carol, we were watching one of your TED Talks, and to me it seemed you were majoring on the two terms yet and now. I just wondered if you could explain to our listeners, you know, how, if they're using those terms, why is saying, you know, you can't do it yet, why is that a good strategy? Is it this thing about, you know, giving them the challenge to keep going and persevering?
Yes. So as you say, I have a TED Talk that's all about the word yet versus now. And when a child is confused or does poorly on something, that child thinks, I hate this. I'm no good at this.
Mm.
I never want to do it again. But you tell them, well, if they say, I'm not good at this, and you say, yet.
Okay.
Or we have this terrible phrase, I'm not a math person yet. And it says, hey, you're on a learning curve.
Mm.
Maybe you're not at the finish line, but you're somewhere on that learning curve. So stay on that learning curve and get to where you want to go. It also conveys that the adult believes you can do it.
Mm. And it's the difference between a dead end and an open road, which is the vision that I've got in my head when you're saying that. Adults say it all the time. Oh, I don't like, I'm awful at that. So we model the fixed mindset often, don't we, inadvertently?
Yes, we do. If often when an adult makes a mistake, the adult will say, oh, that was so stupid. I'm no good at this. I never was a math person or things like that. And that is modeling that mistakes mean you're not smart, mistakes are reprehensible, mm-hmm. you should have known in advance that this would be difficult. And instead we should be modeling, whoa, a mistake, that's interesting, what should I do next? All right, I'll try that, let's see if that works.
I really hear what you're saying, and I've been trying the last week since we knew we were speaking you to do that with children that I work with, Carol. But I'm just wondering if the schools do that. You know, I don't know. How is it in America? Do you see them, the practitioners and the teachers, adopting these kind of phrases with the children?
I do. I see a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I see some incredible applications where students who are typically low achieving are really blossoming. But I also see some kind of misguided applications. I see a lot of teachers developing what I call a false growth mindset.
Ooh, this is a new term, Shirley. False growth mindset. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. As soon as people learn it's good to have a growth mindset, they say, well, I have it. I've always had it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do the hard work of examining their fixed mindset and kind of rooting out that way of thinking. So we're all a mixture. It's really important to convey this. We are all a mixture of sometimes thinking in a fixed mindset way and sometimes thinking in a growth mindset way.
And I think, Carol, even in our discussions when we were driving here this evening, you know, it's identifying it, as you say, that element of reflection can be really uncomfortable when you identify the fixed mindset in yourself. So I like your idea in family life, perhaps, of we can all catch ourselves out with the fixed mindset.
Yes, exactly, because it's there. It's at least sometimes there in all of us. And unless we take that uncomfortable journey to discovering it, we will never be able to embody it to our children. So ask yourself when you're thinking of doing something hard, catch yourself. Are you thinking, oh, I was never good at this. Oh, I shouldn't do it. I might make mistakes and look stupid. When you see someone else who's very accomplished, do you feel threatened by them? Or do you think maybe I could learn something from them? Or they took that journey, I can take it too. So the first step in developing a growth mindset is getting in touch with your fixed mindset. Mm-hmm. And it's not ever even that it ever goes away completely. You have to be vigilant. You have to be looking for it in those difficult situations.
Carol, I wondered if you could talk a little bit to the listeners about labels that we give our children, because we hear it, all of us as parents, you know, and we'll say, oh, you're so pretty, you're so quick, you're so clever, you're intelligent, etc. But actually, we're kind of judging the child's abilities, aren't we, by saying those kind of things. So tell us why we'd be best not to use terms like that.
Yes, labels are often fixed mindset inducing. These labels say you have this permanent quality of being clever, athletic, musical, artistic. You have this fixed amount and it's good. But what the child learns is people have fixed amounts. When I do well, you think it's good. But if I do poorly, you will think I don't have it. I'm not clever. Mm-hmm. I'm not talented. I'm not musical or artistic. So we think we're boosting the child's confidence. And maybe we are for 30 or 40 seconds. Yeah. But the next time that child does something or has the opportunity for a challenge, they may pass it up. Or the next time they have a setback, they might say, oh, I better hide this.
Mm. It's quite counterintuitive for parents, isn't it? You want to say, you are such a clever boy or girl, you know, when actually to do what you're saying and apply it, you have to be, you know, really think about it to some extent until it becomes part of your everyday language and sort of approach.
Yes, you're so right, because it's almost a knee-jerk reaction in our culture today to want to say, oh, you're so brilliant and you're so clever and you're so talented, especially because as a parent, it reflects on you. But we have to resist that. Now, you can still be thrilled when your child does well at something that they applied themselves to. You can be thrilled, but you can say, look, your devotion and dedication really paid off. Or look, remember last year you were just starting and now look where you are? Or remember you doubted yourself during those setbacks, but look what you've accomplished. So you can be thrilled about your child's accomplishments, but it focuses on the learning part and what went into it.
And the element I really like about what you've just said is it's very important to be retrospective and encourage parents to think about progress and effort, where they've come from, how far they've come, you know, rather than the everyday achievement.
Yes. And the whole growth mindset is about learning and improvement over time. And that's what leads to the outcomes that parents so greatly desire. That focus on learning and improvement will bring about those other things as a byproduct.
Carol, just returning to Shirley's point about the classroom and the educational system that our children live under here, one of the quotations in your book said that the more our classrooms are organised around stretching and growing and being comfortable with confusion and setbacks, the more we're going to create growth mindset students and growth mindset leaders. But again, you know, I work in a university. I mean, students want to pass exams. They're encouraged to be, you know, good students rather than good learners. And I just want to go back to Shirley's point and ask you about the sort of incompatibility of the way in which the system is set up, certainly here. Does that mean that it's up to parents much more to encourage a growth mindset at home if the educational system doesn't support that kind of approach?
Catherine and Shirley, we want to change the education system too, don't we?
Yeah, that's another show, but we do.
But we want classrooms to be focused on stretching yourself and becoming the person you want to be. I'm happy to say that many of our schools here are instituting more challenging curricula. And many of our elite universities are looking for students, not the ones who have perfect scores or grades, but the ones who have stretched themselves and shown growth mindset qualities.
We just wanted to sort of talk about, you know, how to sustain this approach to helping our children to have a growth mindset. And I really like the word you use, vigilant, you know, and I've been trying to be vigilant this last week. Any tips or advice to parents, you know, is there a thing, a magnet they could put on their fridge or something that helps us to keep this process moving forward?
Well, I love the diagram, the graphic that you have on your website. That could be on the mirror in the bathroom or the refrigerator, somewhere to remind us that it's the process that counts and where our values lie in this progress and improvement.
I work with early years over here, Carol, children age 0 to 5, and something that I've done for the last, you know, 25 years is say to parents, please don't look at the end result of the artwork. It was the process, you know, the 30 minutes or the hour the little person took. But you see the disappointment on parents' faces when you hand them, you know, a soggy bit of paper covered in black paint and glue. And I'm just, you know, wondering, I think that's where the work needs to start, isn't it? To help parents understand that it is this process that their children are going through. And then Kathy's at the other end, you know, and she's working with students doing degrees and postgrad. So I think we're doing quite a good job in early years, but then it seems to sort of tail off a little bit from my experience and what I've told. So that's the point I'm saying to you. Do you think it is, once they start getting into formal schooling, that things start to change?
I think so, because the parents now think, and the students now think, this is for real. This is going to determine the rest of my life. Parents get tense and communicate it to the students. Parents here, many of them are no longer trusting their children to become the person the parents want them to be.
Yeah.
They're not trusting them to do well in school or get into the school that the parent wants them to. And so in many cases, the parents are really kind of taking over, doing all kinds of advocacy, doing the work, pushing the students too hard. And I think when we do that, we create anxious people who don't know who they are. They know who you want them to be, but they don't know who they are. And there's no joy left. They're thinking of their next A or their next test score, but they're not thinking of what recently the headmaster of an elite high school, preparatory school in the U.S. said, we get the best students, we get them into the best universities, and almost none of them have ever made a contribution to society.
Mm.
We're training them to be grade-getting, test-taking robots. Why don't we talk to them about the kind of contribution they want to make in their lives, and talk to them about the path they might take to get there? And so we want them to go to a school that fits their aspirations, not the one that will bring us the most glory necessarily. We want them to really pursue the path that will lead them to this contribution. A bigger dream, but it takes the burden off this immediate A or test score.
Yeah, as you say, it's a very nice message, because you're not sending the message that the A is important, but the effort. I have to say, there are lots of schools here I know that have embedded the growth and fixed mindset ideas in their, you know, in their staff development programs, and staff are very aware of them. And also schools use effort grades, which surely, Carol, you'd be a big supporter of those. Children receive grades on the basis of their effort rather than what they've achieved.
I didn't hear your sentence.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying that many schools here actually use effort grades. So children are given, you know, grades depending on how hard they've actually worked. And I think that's a positive thing, isn't it?
Yes, it can be a positive thing as long as students don't see it as a negative. In that, we find that in a fixed mindset, students believe that if you're smart, you shouldn't need a lot of effort.
Right.
Need a lot of effort. It means you're not good at it.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure that an effort grade isn't interpreted in that negative way, that everyone is seeing effort as a good thing.
Mm. Right.
So I recommend that part of the actual should be, did you take on challenges? Did you stick to them? Did you make progress? And even did you help your classmates learn?
Yeah, that's
those
a lovely
things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than just effort, because, again, effort can easily be misinterpreted as the consolation prize.
Mm. Yeah.
And also, especially as kids get older, and the teacher isn't with them all day, we don't really know how much effort they put into it. So we don't want to praise something that we haven't.
Yeah, we're not aware of what they've actually been doing all day, so we can't actually comment on it. Carol, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry, there's a little bit of a crackle on the line. We're just checking you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Can we move on now, Carol, to talk about, you know, if there's any kind of gender issues around this topic? So, you know, when you've been working with your students and young people, do you think that boys are more open sometimes to, you know, believing that they have this growth mindset?
That's a very, very interesting question, and we have looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes females have more of a fixed mindset, but often that gender breakdown between fixed and growth mindset, the genders are pretty equal.
Okay.
But females suffer more when they have a fixed mindset.
Yeah.
Males seem to have more of this kind of unshakable confidence. So even if they think it's fixed, they think they have it.
Yeah.
So, Carol, are you saying there is a relationship between growth mindset and esteem, self-esteem?
It's easier to maintain self-esteem in a growth mindset, especially. So if a girl has a fixed mindset, it's fixed. And the confidence is a little fragile. It's fixed. I don't know if I have it. Maybe but I just made it. That really. Okay. And And especially when we look at disciplines like math, engineering, physics, chemistry, computer science, these are areas in which females are financed, where females are negatively stereotyped in the U.S. And if you bring that into a negatively stereotyped area, that's a huge vulnerability. We've studied women in calculus, women in computer science. We see that the women who have a fixed mindset and struggle or confront harsh stereotypes are often discouraged and drop out. But when the women have a growth mindset, they don't like the stereotyping, but they hold fast to the idea this is a learned set of skills and I'm going to learn them. It's particularly important for females to have a growth mindset, and especially in areas where females are negatively stereotyped.
Very interesting. Well, Carol, let's talk about dinner time in family homes. I actually extracted recently a lot of lovely sentences from your book, Mindset, that parents could be using for that way into the conversation at dinner time, which is a very important time in families, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
When you're sitting
Absolutely.
Around the table. What would your best advice to parents be about that time and how to get the best out of those conversations in terms of, you know, developing a positive mindset?
A few moments ago about that everyone can be sharing their struggles. Everyone could be sharing what they're excited to work on and learn next. Everyone, including the adults, can be sharing something they really learned today that they didn't know before and what it means to them, what they can do with it. So there's this whole forward movement of learning growth through hard work, struggle, and setbacks. You can talk about, I teach a seminar to freshmen at my university every year. I have them look up their heroes, the heroes that they thought coasted to greatness on their amazing talent, and they always find out that, no, they struggled, had setbacks, and persevered mightily. So you can even talk about your sports teams in terms of how they held on and fought back, and you can use all of this to embody growth mindset messages.
I think that's it has great resonance in this country, where young people often see, you know, talent programs like American Idol type thing on the TV, instant, you know, celebrity, instant success, and miss out on seeing any of the, you know, footballers earning lots and lots of money, and they miss out on having that, seeing the process, surely, the hard work and the sweat. And they're just sort of, you know, it's not sort of a society that promotes that kind of emphasis, is it?
Do you think adults can be taught to develop a growth mindset, Carol?
Yes, we know they can.
Yeah.
We know that adults can, and it's happening now in many business organizations around the U.S. and actually in other countries, too. Absolutely, adults can be taught a growth mindset. But as you mentioned before, sometimes it's threatening to confront our fixed mindset. We have to have the courage to do that.
Yeah. We liked your comment in the Harvard Business Review recently about, you know, the message from the top is really important, that the top people in the company, you know, value passion and dedication and not necessarily genius. I mean, we've talked about that on and off tonight a lot. But I guess it's the same in the family, isn't it? If the mum or dad or whoever the people are in the family are showing that they value those things, it's going to sort of trickle down, isn't it, into the children?
Yes, the one thing, maybe the most important thing I've learned in my years of work is that we are social animals, and we pick up cues about what is valued.
Yeah.
Within the family, within the school, within an organization where we work. What they think is important. How will I get esteem? Will I succeed? What qualities do I need to develop and demonstrate? We are so sensitive to picking those up, and children as well. So when we really show our value system is about taking on hard things, sticking to them, learning, improving, they will pick that up.
Now, Carol, for people listening, teachers and parents who are interested in actually learning more about the application of the mindset, I've read about Brainology. Does that, you know, is that in the UK? It's a program, isn't it, where people actually learn to embed the mindset in their place of work or learning? Is that correct?
It's a program. It's available throughout the English speaking world and the Spanish speaking world. It's aimed at adolescents.
Oh, so it's for teenagers. Yeah, the whole program is actually aimed at teenagers.
Maybe 11 to 14 years of age. It teaches them a growth mindset and how to apply it to their schoolwork.
Wow, it sounds fantastic, Shirley, doesn't it?
Is that something that parents could Google and try and learn and apply themselves then, do you think, Carol?
It is. It's wonderful when parents go through it with their children.
Yeah. So that's Brainology, and it has its own website, doesn't it, Carol?
Yes, it does.
So we'll try and put that up on our Facebook tonight, because I think it'll be very great interest to people who've got adolescents, wouldn't it, Shirley?
Mm, definitely. Wow, so much stuff. You know, thank you, Carol, so much for, you know, giving up an hour of your lunchtime. And, you know, just putting it in very practical terms for the listeners to hopefully go off and start trying first thing tomorrow morning here in the UK, if they're not already. So, thank you for joining us tonight. It's been great speaking to you in person, having watched you on TED. And, you know, best of luck with all the research that you're carrying on. And definitely you seem so passionate about it still, which is just wonderful.
Passionate.
Yeah.
And it's been a pleasure to speak with you.
So thanks so much to our fantastic transatlantic guest, Professor Carol Dweck. I hope you enjoyed that. Go out and buy Mindset, The Psychology of Success. It's an absolutely brilliant book.
Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neves includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neves Solicitors, your complete legal solution.